Good morning, unless you're in Dallas. Happy Friday. Thank you for listening. I'm going to skip the normal hubbub. I'll tell you at the end of the segment when we're doing the rest of the show. Let's just get into the destructive stupidity of Jerry Jones and the fact that the Packers are now a legitimate NFC threat to be the best team in the NFC because Micah Parsons plays for them. Shocker yesterday. I'm sure you know the news, but to recap it for you, after a standoff between the power-hungry, media-hungry, 11-minute answering a single question owner of the Dallas Cowboys, and probably the best defensive player in the National Football League, after Jerry Jones insisted a private conversation, which is against the rules, by the way, the CBA, with Parsons in the spring, meant no more negotiations would take place and Jerry would not include the man's agent. After all that ugliness, after reports that with a trade approaching, Micah Parsons and his folks reached back out to the Cowboys to try to come to some agreement, Jerry Jones has traded Micah Parsons to the Green Bay Packers. The Packers are going to give the edge rusher, who's an absolute beast, a four-year, $188 million extension. These details are important because this is what the Cowboys idiotically, incompetently would not pay Micah Parsons. Here's what it costs. Four-year, $188 million extension. At $47 million per year, Micah Parsons is the highest non-quarterback per season in the history of the National Football League. And the number that matters the most, always matters the most, $120 million guaranteed. Unless you doubt or don't understand what Jerry didn't, the value of Parsons, in a league where after having a quarterback, the most important individual player you can have is someone who stops the quarterback. That's how the game works today. This is a player who, along with Reggie White, who, by the way, you made a list of the best football players in history, and it's a small list, and Reggie White is on there. With that guy, Micah Parsons, is the only player in the history of the sport to have 12 or more sacks in each of his first four seasons. He is the only player in Cowboys history to be drafted and to have some of the accolades he had in his first four seasons by the Cowboys and not play his fifth season with the Cowboys. He is, Micah Parsons, the betting favorite by a wide margin, basically twice as likely as the next guy, which is Trey Hendrickson. He is the betting favorite to be defensive player of the year. He has single-handedly, his arrival, taken the Packers' odds from being Super Bowl champions this season from ninth all the way to fourth. I mean, look, I can give you stat after stat after stat after stat after stat. This is a highway robbery. It is incompetence. It is a dark day in Dallas. That shouldn't be a surprise. And it is a boon for the Packers. And we're going to get into all of that, and I will get to Green Bay and how great this is for them and how remarkable it is and why any team that lands Micah Parsons just won the day. But for Green Bay in particular, it's very, very special. But let me just tell you a little bit about Jerry Jones. You know, this is a reminder that Jerry Jones didn't destroy the team yesterday or in the last few months. He has been destroying the team for two decades, and it's easy to forget sometimes in the flash of what used to be that charming smile. That's gone now. In the idea that his personality was more important than what they did on the field. They say that history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes. And it is rhyming in Dallas, and it is the tune of destruction and ego and incompetence. And let me pull out that word ego, because the forces that have shaped the National Football League are fascinating over the last 20 or 30 years. But none has been more powerful or important, at least in Dallas, and really to the history of the rest of the league, than the ego of Jerry Jones. The guy that would not tolerate the success of Jimmy Johnson a long time ago, when the Cowboys had a dynasty and could have had a longer dynasty, the Cowboys should have been the Patriots. They should have been what the Chiefs are today. And Jerry fired that coach a long time ago because that coach didn't bow at the altar of Jerry Jones. People tell you who they are, listen. And Jerry told us 30 years ago, a long time ago, that he's about Jerry Jones, that he's about his ego, that he's about himself. And do you know what people who are, and I'm not saying Jerry's a narcissist, but do you know what people who are narcissists do, or people who are self-absorbed in certain walks of life, in this case if you're a football team? They make it about them, but they're charming usually, and they're funny, and they'll trick you, and they'll fool you. This isn't the same thing as firing Jimmy. It's not repeating itself, but it does rhyme. Because in the end, the actual reason Micah Parsons potentially makes the Packers Super Bowl champions, this is Saquon Barkley all over again, but it's not just incompetence. It's ego. It's the same thing that happened with Jimmy. It's the same thing that has required Jerry Jones to always play at general manager. It's the same thing that has made him think he's smarter than everyone else. It's the same reason when he has brought in great coaches, Parcells was one, it would never work because he, Jerry Jones, always had to come first. Not the winning, not a competently run organization, not smart decision making, not even the very basic idea. You don't trade Micah Parsons. Very smart people, and Ryan Hickey, no, just kidding. Very smart people said it was a 0% chance this could happen, that this was impossible, that it would never occur. Michael Irvin said that in the last 24 hours. Nick Costos, our good friend from BetQL, said that, who just got an extension from Odyssey. Good job, Nick. He deserves it. Ryan said that. Here's the thing. Their error was not assessing what should be and what would be 999 out of 1,000 times. Their error was not understanding that Jerry Jones' ego is the defining characteristic of the Dallas Cowboys. He is awful for that team. He doesn't care about the fans. He doesn't care about winning. He understands. Look, he's a good business person. It's just like being in the oil business. It doesn't matter how you treat your employees, and some of them treat them great. It doesn't matter the details of getting the oil out of the ground. People need oil. They got to drive around America. You're going to be able to sell it. And it's exactly the same with a sports team and the love that owners take advantage of if, like Jerry Jones, they want to put their ego first. Because if you are a fan of a team, you're going to love them. You're going to love them, no matter how much they break your heart. I say this as a Cubs and a Missouri fan. No matter how much you want to hate them, I say this as a Bears fan. And so Jerry doesn't have to prioritize winning his fans, what they desire, what they want, what they need, because they're going to be there. So he's going to make his money, set that aside. The one thing that can reach a business person who operates a different business the way that Jerry does might be your wallet. His wallet won't be affected. And so most owners, Clark Hunt in Kansas City, just go down the list. And I think the Packers ownership model as a differentiator is really interesting because they don't have an owner. They operate as basically they're a collective that's owned by the fans. And so the entire structure is protected from the ego of one person. It's about football excellence. Not that it's easy. There's a lot of smart people out there. Jerry's on the other end of the spectrum here. And so his need to make it about him is part of the reasons Micah Parsons is gone. I had a negotiation. This was about me. I'm smarter than everyone else. He didn't agree. I don't like his agent. The level of incompetence, the level of stupidity, the level of unacceptableness. And please stop with the Kenny Clark's really good. No, man. He's been a Pro Bowl, sure, all pro a couple times, whatever, dude. Defensive tackle, great. Micah Parsons is arguably the best football player in the National Football League. He is certainly one of the two or three most impactful players defensively in the National Football League. He is a generational talent. And you know, with all respect, by the way, I feel bad for Clark. That guy just left a perennial winner to go to the Cowboys. That guy got, you think the Cowboys fans are big losers? Think about being Kenny Clark and the two first-round draft picks. Stop. Give me a break. First of all, the person selecting with those draft picks is the guy that just traded Micah Parsons, so forgive me if I don't think those will be very valuable. Secondly, they're going to be, and they would have been already, low-level first-round picks, but since, check this out, when you make a trade, the guy's actually on the other team that you're trading with, Micah Parsons is a Packer, those are going to be the 26th and the 28th pick in the 26th and 27th draft, which are not particularly valuable for Micah Parsons. Oh, and guess what? This goes to ego. It's not about football decisions. Had Jerry Jones gotten pissed off at Micah Parsons for not bowing at the altar of Jerry Jones' greatness in January, this trade could have happened in March when other teams would have had more cap space, more understanding, more time, the ability to really put a deal together. They, the Cowboys, undervalued or undersold their own commodity that they shouldn't have sold in the first place, because it isn't about value. The only thing Jerry values is Jerry Jones. And you can hear it here. You shouldn't. You know how there's a scene in it's an old movie called Swingers, but there's a scene where Mikey, I think his name is, calls a girl 50 times and he leaves her like 50 voice messages, and they just show you he basically has a meltdown. And I like that movie. If it comes on, I'll watch it. I can't watch that scene. I go to the bathroom, I skip through it. That's what the Jerry Jones press conference was like. I watched it. I will never watch it again. I will never. I can't, it's like The Revenant with Leo, who won an Academy Award for it. Great film. Too much pain in there. And the pain of watching Jerry is difficult. I'll play a few small slices of the man's ego. Jerry Jones, by the way, spoke for 11 and a half minutes on a question. Hey, Jerry, what time is it? 11. I'm everything. Here's Jerry Jones trying to explain what in the hell he was thinking.
We did think it was in the best interest of our organization, not only the future, but right now, this season as well. We've gained a Pro Bowl player. We've gained a Pro Bowl player in an area that we had big concerns in, on the inside of our defense.
Yeah, the only concern Jerry has is Jerry. I'm not going to play all these clips that I plan to, but there was a bunch of garbage about no ill will, and we really thought it through, and blah, 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 blah. Here's the other thing. How do I say this? I'll let Jerry say it. If you're going to trade, who are the players in this game that are basically untradeable? I mean, Micah Parsons, Patrick Mahomes, unless you're Ryan Hickey, Josh Allen. I mean, it should be Trey Hendrickson. We have an organizational issue there. I mean, there's some names. But if you're going to trade an untradeable player, you need to know his name. You need to know what his first name is. You need to know what you're doing. And you make of this what you will, but the owner and GM of the Cowboys, Jerry Jones, for stretches of this press conference, explaining one of the worst trades in NFL history, could not properly remember the name or know the name or cite the name of the person he had just sent to Green Bay.
There was no question in our mind that Michael could bring us a lot of resources on a trade. Did I talk to Michael?
Micah.
The other thing that I would like to say is I firmly did me made a commitment to Michael this spring, and paid him, and to pay him.
Yeah, forgive me if I think maybe it's possible Jerry didn't quite remember the details of his fake negotiation he wasn't supposed to have in the first place, and therefore, I don't know, maybe shouldn't have tried to hold Micah, accountable. By the way, if I were the Packers, and I'm only joking at 11%, I would scour America. They don't have phone books anymore, but I would scour America for a Michael Parsons. I would sign him to my practice squad. I don't know how this works from a CBA perspective. And then I would call up Jerry and offer him Michael Parsons for a first-round pick, but he has 30 seconds to decide. Called into the league. I'm serious. Can't wait for that press conference. We got Michael back, and we got him for less than we sent him. Michael shows up, looks like me. What are you going to do? Wow. Well, there's a lot more to unpack on this, but and I know there's always contrarians trying to make the argument, I think this trade will work and won't work. It won't work. It doesn't come from a place of football understanding. This isn't a tactical move where maybe the guy's Napoleon and nobody understands his brilliance till he unleashes his battle plan. This is an egomaniac who for a generation has prioritized his ego over what is in the best interest of a team that millions of people love and care about. And again, because history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes, this isn't new. We didn't have social media. It wasn't the same era. Firing Jimmy back in the day because Jimmy didn't bow at the altar of Jerry's greatness was the end of Cowboys greatness. Cowboys greatness was about the owner hiring the right coach, which is, by the way, how it works. The reason the Chiefs are amazing and Clark Hunt should get credit because he hired Andy Reid. You can go down a list of all these folks who make these decisions. Jerry Jones didn't change yesterday. He just reminded of who he's always been. And that is someone that's an egomaniacal organizational destroyer. And he doesn't care. He doesn't care. That's the biggest thing. And the beneficiary is the Green Bay Packers. Thanks, Jerry. As a fan of a team in the NFC North that's not the Packers, thanks, man. Thanks a lot. If you have a take, if you have a perspective, we'll take your phone calls. 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476. You can hit me on social media, SportsWriter, Sports R-E-I-T-E-R. More on this and why a Packers team I was already high on may be the favorites to come out of the NFC next year on Writer Than You.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast. Welcome back to Writer Than You.
I think we should start selling that transition because buy and sell are not dissimilar. They're kind of two sides of the same coin, right?
Here are two things that are polar opposite. Jerry Jones and making sense. Jerry Jones and doing good business.
Buy. Wow, that was really good.
Buy. On the Infinity Sports Network.
All right, welcome back into the show. We have some movement on social media to make Ryan Hickey bum of the week. That guy leading the charge. So, Bill, is Ryan a shoo-in for bum of the week with that Micah take from earlier in the week? I think so. Fair. It was a terrible take. I tried to talk to Ryan about it this morning, but he acted like Jerry Jones. So I just moved on to a different conversation. Guy, Ryan, good morning.
Good morning, Bill. I didn't trade away Micah Parsons. I said he wasn't going to get traded. Saying he's not going to be traded is a million times better than actually following through and trading him.
He's in the football business. You're in the talking about football business, I think, is the thing.
I know I'm new here, but I know you don't love sometimes when I speak in absolutes.
Riddles?
But I'm gonna speak another absolute here. If Jerry Jones does not win Bum of the Week, I think it would be the biggest upset in Bum of the Week history.
Okay. We'll
spanning
see.
Years.
I'm just telling you what the listeners think, all right? That they think it's you.
That I'm sorry, that's crazy.
I mean, Jerry's definitely a strong kid. There's definitely some people who are feeling more safe and more comfortable today as Bum of the Week rapidly approaches, including some who work here. Well, one who works here but doesn't really work here. But you know what I'm saying. You get what I'm saying. Is employed here. 888-710-4ISN. You know who I mean. Everybody knows who I mean. He knows who I mean. Yeah. 888-710-4ISN. Let me just take a minute here because I need to do this. Congratulations to the Green Bay Packers. Every time there is a shocker like this, right, a news story in sports that's basically the equivalent of an earthquake, just comes out of nowhere and shakes up the whole world, there are the inevitable contrarian views, and I like those generally speaking, and I think it's really smart not to just fall in line with the herd and what everyone else is saying and thinking, and this, well, I don't know, Micah Parsons, 4-year deal, a lot of guaranteed money, all of that misses the point. And beyond the fact that he is, I think he's the best defensive player in football, but whatever. He's one of the two or three. He's a difference maker. It's the fact that you have to take risks, that you have to go for it sometimes to win Super Bowls. There was no guarantee when the Rams went and got Stafford that was going to work out. There was no guarantee. I think it's a little bit lower risk threshold because the Giants didn't know what they had, but the Eagles going to get Saquon Barkley, that addition was a huge part of the reason that they're Super Bowl champions. And this reality across sports and certainly the NFL has been true for a really long time. The Packers last year, in a very crowded NFC North, won 11 games. Their defense last year, without Micah Parsons, was outstanding. 6 in yards allowed per game defensively, 6 in points allowed per game, 8th in sacks. By the way, the Cowboys sacked a ton of people last year, because Micah Parsons got a bunch of them, and because when you have to focus on a Micah Parsons, it creates so much space and openings and opportunities for the rest of your defensive line. So a really good Packers defense, of course they get better, because Micah Parsons will do Micah Parsons things. But the other reality is, just like bringing in Tyreek Hill in Miami in theory opens up opportunities for other receivers, even more so because the line is obviously much more concentrated, smaller space, Micah Parsons being there would make a mediocre or bad defense better. It's a really good defense. They're going to be outstanding. They may be one of the best defenses in the – they will be. They could be the best defense in the NFL, depending on health. Jordan Love is the question mark for a lot of people in Green Bay, right? I'm high on him. Ryan is low on him, or lower, I think, is a fair characterization. And there's smart people across the football world who have varying views. And if I'm right, if he's really great, then obviously it's good news. But the other thing is when you make your defense this much more formidable, when you get a game wrecker defensively who can go out there and multiple times, probably multiple weeks over the course of the season, who will single-handedly limit the opposing quarterback and the opposing offense enough to win games if your offense isn't clicking, it doesn't just create sort of a safety net for Jordan Love or for the Packers. It makes life easier for the quarterback. There is less pressure. You don't have to press. You don't have to throw into those windows sometimes that maybe aren't there because you know your defense has your back. There's a reality and a psychological reality that this is going to benefit the Green Bay Packers. In every way, this news is huge for Green Bay. And so the idea that Micah Parsons in a few years will be older, stop. Risk is part of the deal. Taking gambles is part of the deal. This is one of the least risky risks that you can take in the National Football League. We have proof of concept. We don't have to guess whether he's a difference maker. He's coming from an organization that is obviously incredibly poorly run to a place that is not. His ability to do what he has done as a Dallas Cowboy should be respected because people don't always succeed in Dallas when they should. And he still was the Micah Parsons that has created this fur correctly that he's been traded. All right, and by the way, I would love this if this were any team in the NFL who wanted to go for it. You know, cap realities aside, if the Buffalo Bills did this, I'd go, hell yeah. Or if the Ravens did this, I'd go, hell yeah. I was dreaming yesterday, and I didn't even look into how possible this would have been. Just my dream, because I like the Chiefs, because I used to write about them. Like, man, can you imagine Micah and Chris Jones on the same, and I need to include Chris Jones in the sort of game-changing conversation, on the same team. Any of those squads in the AFC would have been interesting. But the path would still be difficult because it's the AFC, and barring it being the Chiefs, there's still the Chiefs and all these other teams you have to go through. This is the NFC. It's open. You can make a really compelling case now. I think I would make a compelling case that the Packers are one of the two or three favorites to come out of the NFC and might be the favorite. Depends on your temperature on the Eagles. I get it, but just history tells us it's really hard to repeat. It just is. And outside of teams like the Buffalo Bills, who never won one, the idea of going again and again and again and again is pretty unheard of. And this would be the third time in 4 years if the Eagles came out of the NFC to just represent the NFC in the Super Bowl, if I'm doing that properly. And so, them aside, I guess the Niners, right? I suppose. And then you look, I think, largely, I'm not high on the Rams, to the NFC North. And again, maybe all four of these teams, maybe the three that are not the Packers, will be outstanding. Maybe. But as we have discussed a lot on the show, there are huge question marks. And I think the odds are that one of the Bears, the Vikings, the Lions, are going to be markedly less impressive than we expect. And in the case, obviously, of Minnesota and Detroit, if it's one or both of them, a lot less impressive than they were last year. For the reasons we've talked about. I don't know if Caleb Williams in year two is going to be outstanding or not. I don't know if Ben Johnson is able to make the leap to head coach. Those are big question marks. With an organization that loses all the time. With Minnesota, they have an unproven, he's not a rookie, but he was a rookie last year and he was hurt. They have an unproven young quarterback who's never started in the NFL. And preseason's hard to gauge. I'm not saying it won't work, but it's not as if he set the world on fire or we had these incredible glowing reports out of the folks who cover the Vikings day to day with, wow, what they're seeing from JJ. It's the opposite. Doesn't mean it won't work, but it may not. And then in Detroit, really talented football team, also have very good odds to be Super Bowl champions and come out of the NFC this year. And I like Dan Campbell a lot, and I doubted him when he got hired, whatever, 3-4 years ago, and he said he was going to bite off kneecaps, and that was wrong. And so the doubts that are creeping in, I hope are wrong. I like that organization. I like that coach. That city deserves success and the heartbreak they've had. But they lost a coordinator to be the head coach of the Jets, highly respected, coordinator to be the head coach of the Bears, highly respected. I don't know if Glenn or Johnson are going to be great head coaches. I do know they were incredible coordinators. That's why they got jobs as head coaches. And to lose both those guys, it's question marks. And so the point is, there is potentially an opportunity before the addition of Micah Parsons for a Packers team that had a lot of continuity to go out there and make a leap forward. Oh, and I'm just going to, little Bears plug here. Maybe you think the Bears are going to be better than last year, like I'm hoping. They won five games last year. They were 1-5 in conference last season. And if you remember, they had some close calls. They had some games they could have won against those other three teams. If you just think the Bears are an 8-win team or a 9-win team, and there's a ceiling beyond that, right? But let's just say for the sake of this conversation, you think the Bears can win 3 or 4 more games this year than last year. They can go from 5 wins to 8 or 9, and they went 1-5 against the NFC North, odds are they're going to win a few more games against those teams. Let's say they go 3-3 against the conference. That's two more wins. That's pulling back maybe Detroit a game. That's pulling back maybe Minnesota a game. The point is the margins are really thin for the Packers before adding Micah Parsons. And the fact they took this risk and they took this gamble and they went for it and they put their chips in the middle. Those of you that play poker will know what this means. If you've got 12 or 15 outs, you put all your money in the middle of the table. And only a 60% chance if you're on the flop, if you've got 12 outs. You know what I'm talking about, if you know what I'm talking about. Doesn't mean you're going to win. But if you're gonna, if you're in a game where you gamble, and that's the National Football League, you might as well go all in when the odds are 60% is going to work than when they're 12%. I love it. I love the well-timed risk. I love the well-timed, let's do this. They didn't pay much of a price. Those first-round picks are not going to be very valuable because they're going to be a good football team. And whether the Packers win the Super Bowl or not, not just this year, by the way, the next few years, it is the right football move because the Packers operate as if they care about football and not the individual ego of some owner who doesn't care about football or victory. Good job, Green Bay Packers. And by the way, it kills me as a Bears fan. Kills me. I like Detroit. I root for the Lions. I don't really care about the Vikings. I'm sort of net neutral. I don't want the Packers to be successful. I want them to fail. But you know why they don't? You know why I've accepted a certain reality of, at least in the long term of my life, failure as a Bears fan? Half of it's because of the Bears. The other half is because the Packers are the opposite of the Cowboys. They're so well run, and their organizational structure is not dependent on one person going crazy. It's why you don't want to live under a king or a queen or a dictatorship. Because if one person rules your world, they can be great for 20 years. If they lose their mind or just become an egomaniac or lose the plot, then your whole world crashes. The Cowboys are a dictatorship, and that dictator doesn't care about his team. Totally different in Green Bay. And it's a huge win for them. It's a huge day. I don't know if they're going to win the whole thing, but they might. Damn it. What are you doing, Jerry? Good job, Packers. 888-710-4ISN. 888-710-4ISN. We'll keep this going. We'll keep talking. I want to get Ryan's take as well because he's had some great takes on this in the last couple weeks. We got to really get into that. And we'll try to talk some college football. All of that after a sports flash from Andrew Bogish.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
Bill Kyle Schwarber and the Phillies took out their frustrations over being swept by the Mets earlier this week on the Braves last night.
1-2.
Oh, that one's drilled deep to right field. He has done it! Four home runs in a game! A three-run home run!
Tom McCarthy on NBC Sports Philadelphia. Schwarber is the third player this season, the 21st overall with a four-homer game. He also tied the team record with 9 RBI in a 19-4 rout of the Braves. Those Mets lost at home to the Marlins 7-4. So Phillies lead atop the NL East is 5 games this morning. For the first time since 2016, South Florida beats a ranked team 34-7 over number 25 Boise State in Tampa. Bulls QB Byron Brown threw for 210 yards and ran for 2 scores. The Liberty didn't have Sabrina Ionescu or Jonquel Jones, but still beat the Mystics last night 89-63. And American Tommy Paul needed 5 sets, nearly 4.5 hours to beat Nuno Borges in round 2 of the U.S. Open last night. That match ending around 1:30 a.m. Eastern. I'm Andrew Bogish.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast. Welcome back to Writer Than You.
I'm a Bears fan, so I can say this. It's accurate, right? What was the old Spock saying? Only Nixon could go to China? Only I? The Bears suck. They're awful. I hate them, even though they're my team.
On the Infinity Sports Network.
All right, welcome back into the show. Bill Ryder with you. Let's get a competing perspective on Michael Parsons. Just kidding. Micah Parsons, Jerry. Micah Parsons being traded to the Green Bay Packers. Phone number if you want to join the conversation is 888-710-4ISN. Let's go to Naples, Florida. Larry, what's up, buddy? Happy Friday. You're back on Writer Than You.
You know, I'm a big fan, Bill. Hey, just one thing. If they would have signed him, it would have taken about 50% of their cap with 3 players, which never worked. It's only been tried once before in the history of the league with Stafford, Sue, and Megatron, of course, in Detroit, and it failed. I don't care if you got you know, Leroy Kelly, Jim Brown, and Tom Brady, if three players are taking up 50% of your cap, it's not going to work. And Jerry knew this, and that's why he had to trade him. But he could have got more than two number one picks in a player. I think he should ask for three number ones and two players at least. And I'll listen off air to your response. Again, a big fan. I listen to you guys every morning.
Larry, you're the best, buddy. I love the counter perspective. It's a great one. It's a good one. I'll sort of respond because I have a different view. First of all, it's not a secret. It was never a secret that he was going to have to pay all three of these guys. And so in a functioning, acceptable football organization that's not run based on ego, that's run, you know, right or wrong in terms of what you conclude, that's run based on football and what's best for a football team, you would have known this was coming. Micah Parsons was not a fifth-round draft pick who went from three sacks, two sacks to 25 sacks, right? This has been a known situation that Jerry did not prepare for. And secondly, you make a really interesting point. I would say you're right in a vacuum, but you don't throw good money after bad. You don't make decisions that are wrong because you made other wrong decisions. Micah Parsons of those three guys is the guy that you keep. And so the mistakes for me wasn't paying Micah, was paying the other guys, particularly Dak. And I recognize, and we discussed, Larry, a lot on the show, that was a catch-22, but I was on the record as, I get it, but I wouldn't pay Kyler and I wouldn't pay Dak. And people go, what are you going to do? And I don't know, something else. I just personally wouldn't do it. And I think this is the chickens coming home to roost a little bit here. And then lastly, I would say to you, it wasn't Jerry's intention to operate the way that he did because of what you're saying. Maybe what you're saying is right. That's not why Jerry did it. As I noted, this wasn't a football decision. It's an ego decision. He told us he wanted to pay him, but only what he agreed to in a meeting that he's not allowed to have according to the CBA. And so maybe Jerry and his ego, maniacal, self-absorbed reality accidentally stumbled into the right decision. I don't think he did. But that's not a way to operate a football team. It's just not. But I appreciate the perspective, and I like the competing view at 888-710-4ISN. Knowing Ryan, he may also have the same view as you, because Ryan deals only in absolutes.
The only Cowboys fleeced the Packers. Fleeced them.
Good morning. Were you like me when this news broke? Did you check multiple accounts to make sure they weren't fake accounts, that it wasn't a joke? Because I did.
I did not, in part because I got an alert on my phone. Like, I wasn't on Twitter when I saw it. I got an alert, so I said, oh. Then I went to Twitter. By that point, it was like 5 minutes, and it was like boom, 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 boom.
Where did I see it first? Was it Russini? I can't remember where I saw it first, but I'm like, no. I'm going to go to this, and I don't know if it was not Russini, but I'm going to go to this. It's going to say, you know, Russini with three S's or something, and they're going to have 100 followers, and nope, that was the real one. And then I checked another one and another one. Pretty insane.
Still shocked. Like, it's almost 24 hours later. I'm still in a state of shock that it actually happened.
Who's more shocked? Dallas fans or poor Kenny Clark, who woke up a Cowboy today?
Probably Kenny Clark, because I'm sure even in his wildest imaginations, never envisioned him moving off of this team. You're right. That's poor guy. That's
brutal.
That's tough.
You're not as high on Jordan Love as I am. It'll matter to a degree, right? I'm not sure how much it matters anymore. It matters a lot less what Jordan Love. Just think if Jordan Love reclaims the form he had a couple seasons ago, you know, and at the end of a couple seasons ago, I'm remembering this properly. The Packers, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but it's not unreasonable to think that the Packers could be the best team in the NFC, a 13-win team or something in that range, more, and we're talking about them on the level of whoever the best team in the AFC is come December, the Chiefs, say, right? Is that they're in that elite conversation. The way we discussed Detroit maybe last year. I think they have everything now. They have a great coach. They have a balanced football team. They're going to put points in the – I think they will. Their defense is going to be outstanding. It was great last year. Obviously, adding Micah Parsons improves it for the reasons we've discussed. Prediction right now. The Packers are what seed when we get to the playoffs?
I will say Three, maybe two.
You can't put the Eagles ahead of them.
Why not?
The Eagles have shown an inability to maintain focus and discipline. I think that head coach got real lucky and is overrated. And championship hangovers are a very real thing.
They won 12 straight games last year to finish.
I got it.
Season.
And then they won the Super Bowl.
And then they went to the number one seed. And the Lions went 15-2.
I think Detroit can take a step back.
Same. I think the Eagles could be the best. I think putting the Eagles at one is not crazy at all.
Which means the Eagles will not finish one.
I've learned the playoffs.
God, it makes me mad at you that you made Zach Gelb so right, because I used to defend you in my mind when he called you hot take kicky.
Where's that? What am I? The hot take is that the Eagles could be the number one seed.
You did have a great take earlier, and you threw somebody under the bus, but I love it. So Andrew Bogish, who we love, who's amazing, who by the way is like the 14th best Infinity Sports Network host of all time.
Make him at 15? It's 13 or 14. I have to look 13? At the rankings again, but he's in there, and he's not 15.
Who am I to argue? But this is a pet peeve of mine, and you pointed out when he was doing the update, you did not love this grammatically correct turn of phrase by our beloved Andrew Bogish.
With a four-homer game, he also tied the team record with 9 RBI.
You can't say RBI. It's RBIs. I understand it's run batted ins. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You can't say 12 RBI, 9 RBI, right? You're with, well, you, of course you're with me. You pointed it out.
I just got the chills hearing that.
What are we doing?
9 RBI. Ugh.
So not many things bother me. Fingers on, like nails on a chalkboard actually causes me physical pain. Thinking about it causes me physical pain. You know, if you're at a movie and there's a surprise scene where a guy gets kicked where the sun doesn't shine, half the audience kind of like jolts forward. That's how I feel about nails on the chalkboard and people saying RBI if it's more than one. He had an RBI. Great. He had 3 RBI. No. Just say the whole thing, then just say he had 9 runs batted in. RBIs.
RBIs.
Not all grammar needs to be correct.
Not all grammar sounds correct.
Some things are wrong. Anyway. Why are we going after Andrew Bogish? Because you brought it up. Because you pointed it out to me.
It's like it sticks out boom. It pierces your eardrums as soon as you hear it. Even if you're not like half paying attention, just boom, pushes through.
In fairness to Bogish, and I mean, I'm being serious, he might be the smartest person that works the Infinity Sports Network. He's not on the list, right? We're debating who the 3 teams in the NFC are. He's one or two. And if you're really bright, then you're probably like aware, you know, really smart people are very, you know, sticklers for the rule. I get it. He's a very smart guy.
Fordham grad. Still,
I know.
Very smart man.
Is that a hard school to get into?
It's not easy.
Okay.
It's not easy.
My daughter has that on her list.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You going to come out and visit?
I think we will, yeah.
That's we'll exciting. See. That's very exciting.
It's a long ways away from mom and dad, so I think that might be the appeal.
At that age, I'm sure that's, yeah, you look at the other side of the country. Yeah.
She wanted to go to a Texas school, but then they traded Micah Parsons, and she's like, I can't share a state with someone that idiotic. She actually doesn't want to go to a Texas school. By the way, they played like, not garbage. I was really excited about Nebraska yesterday. I was really, because my thing is, and I thought Josh Pate, I'm going to keep leaning on Josh Pate. But he's blown up, by the way, hasn't he? The Josh Pate college football show, he's everywhere.
I don't think there's a platform, maybe, that you cannot hear him on. Everywhere he's there.
I went to Starbucks the other day, and he was there. He was just like doing football talk in the corner.
Gets a coffee, gets a football talk right there.
Open mic night. Broke down Oregon's offense. So, all right, Nebraska did win last night against Cincinnati. And the final score, I think, was it 2017? It wasn't. They were up 20-10 late in the game. But it was close for long stretches of the night. I watched the game, and I will admit that I started flipping around a little bit. It was a rough one to watch. It was a rough game to watch. And the anti-Nebraska people came out in full force. In fact, I'm pretty sure that Chris Hassel, who I used to work with at CBS Sports HQ, is a big Iowa dude, came out in full force. I will say this, and it was Josh who pointed this out. Last year, Oregon had a really rough start against, who do they play? Like Louisiana State Community College? Northwest?
Idaho.
And as you may know, Oregon won the Big Ten. So it's a big overreaction. Here's my mini take on Nebraska football. Very smart people. There's a range of what people think can happen. Nebraska has a pretty easy schedule. They have a legitimate quarterback. Is it weird that he dresses up to look exactly like Patrick Mahomes? It's very weird. It's a little weird. You see his walk-in? You think it's creepy?
The walk-in, how he dresses like on the field. Even, you know, like Mahomes, like when he's asking for a play from Reed, does kind of like almost like the like come here sort of give thing me, with his hands.
I know.
Raiola's film doing that yesterday. It's actually a lot much.
He's good, though.
Very, very talented. Extremely talented.
He's really good. So you have a quarterback, you have a guy in Matt Rhule who has a history of third-year breakthroughs, and that's a pattern throughout his career. He's obviously in year three at Nebraska. You have a fairly easy schedule. There is the potential there for some success. And you don't need to go 10-2, by the way, to turn Nebraska football around. If you go 9-3 and you're really competitive against, they play Penn State, right? Like some of those football teams, you beat Iowa at the end of the year because that's kind of a local rivalry. It's just a big step forward. You don't have to go from what they were to you're in the college football playoff. You don't have to be Indiana this year. I think they can be. And so the ability to screw up last night was real. And Cincinnati's not a great football team, but they're okay. They're okay, right? They're not Idaho. They're not Idaho Northwest State Community College. They're not. So I actually think it's a big win to just get a win. Don't care if it's ugly. Don't care what doesn't necessarily work. Doesn't care how it looks. And I say this as a fan of many fan bases that carry the residual history of failures again and again and again and again, Cubs and all these other teams. That's a real thing. And it affects guys that were obviously never there. The pressure, the feeling of the difficulty in being calm because of the history you're trying to overcome. I know it's week one against Cincinnati. At a neutral site game in Kansas City, which isn't even that neutral. That's Nebraska land compared to Cincinnati. I think it's a good win. And I think the idea of riding off Nebraska after a W is stupid, as we saw from Oregon last year. Now, the counter-argument is Oregon was looking past Idaho because they're Oregon, and Nebraska was never going to look past anybody because they're not. But I thought there were some flashes and some signs in there. And I was just nice to – and maybe I'm trying too hard to watch a college football game and really be into it because I'm really excited about this season. But I thought it was an important performance. Is it Ohio State, Texas? No. I thought it was an important win.
Can I throw this in there really fast?
Yeah.
To your point about the geography, that was supposed to be a Cincinnati home game, which is why Cincinnati was in red. Why on earth would they ever agree to a neutral site in which you had 70,000 people in red cheering for Nebraska?
Because I think the money must have been really good, and it's a huge place to play. And a lot of, I don't know.
Put it in Indy. It's more neutral than Nebraska's best backyard.
But I don't
backyard.
Think Cincinnati fans are going to travel the way that Nebraska fans will travel. And so if you put it, I think it's money grab is what it is. You know, it's not the same thing, but we've seen smaller schools over the years just be like, okay, I'll play Alabama and get slaughtered, but they're going to pay me a nice little, you know, altar fee. Just sacrifice yourself on the altar. By the way, they were competitive. Like, they could have won that game. Let's talk some college football with Brian Fisher from SI next here on Rather Than You.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
All right, good morning. Happy Friday. Bill Ryder with you. Thank you for listening and hanging out. I'm so excited. College football underway in earnest starting tomorrow. And to talk about it, to break it down, to visit a little bit about one of the games last night is the great Brian Fisher, Sports Illustrated, college athletics, college football reporter, writer extraordinaire, co-host of Others Receiving Votes podcast, and on Twitter X, whatever I'm supposed to call it, at Brian D. Fisher. Brian, good morning, buddy. Thanks for making time.
Great to be on with you.
So let's start with Nebraska, if you don't mind, because I am from Iowa and I went to Missouri, and I remember the glory days of Nebraska when they were great. And there have been some folks out there who, like you, are experts on college football who think that program in year three under Matt Rhule can break through. I saw a couple respected people who think they can be 10-2. I know it's one game against Cincinnati. Any takeaways from last night? Any level of optimism or pessimism you have for Nebraska this year?
Yeah, you know, slightly a little more pessimistic after seeing what happened last night. But, you know, I think Cincinnati overall is going to be a much improved team under Scott Satterfield this year. So that you do kind of got to keep that in mind, certainly in the Big 12 there. And so factoring in the opponent, yeah, you would have liked to have seen more from the Cornhuskers. You know, I think Dylan Raiola, it looked like almost a preseason game, you know, a little rusty here and there with some throws. But I think it's going to come down to that offense. Can they get big plays? You know, I think that was when they were able to kind of move the ball a little bit more consistently last night, you could see the life in the offense. And I think for Dana Holgorsen, I think for Dylan Raiola, if they can do that a little more consistently, you know, the schedule does set up well to where they can go on a run here in the next couple of weeks and, you know, maybe go into that Michigan game with momentum early in the year. And from there, you know, we'll see. You know, I think this is always going to be a big year for Matt Rhule. You know, year three is typically when he makes that big jump. And, you know, maybe not the most encouraging start, but hey, Nebraska found a way to win a one-score game, which in the past has been tricky for them, so you got to give credit for them to get over the hump there.
Yeah, no, as a fan of many failing teams, you take the victories however you can get them. Brian Fisher here on the show. Brian, obviously there's a lot of great football start this weekend. Ohio State Texas is it's going to be incredible. I can't wait. Do you have a strong lean this early in the year with a lot less data and information? Do you have a strong lean on who you think wins this football game?
Yeah, you know, I'm actually coming to you about 100 feet away from the horseshoe right now, and
I
don't get any sense in terms of this one. This one feels like a big coin flip. I mean, you know, just the talent level of both teams, you know, kind of lends that to this game. And I mean, Ohio State, look, they're playing at home in a venue that can be very difficult for opponents, and obviously they have the best offensive player in the country in Jeremiah Smith and the best defensive player in the country in Caleb Downs. So whatever issues they might have in terms of the offensive line, breaking in a new quarterback, like that can cover up, you know, a lot of the issues there. The thing about Texas is, yes, there's a lot of hype around Arch Manning, but this is a very, very good team that Steve Sarkisian has assembled. Guys like Colin Simmons and you know, you can kind of go on down the line. I mean, the spine of that defense is one of the best in the country with what the personnel they have coming back. And you throw in, you know, Anthony Wingo and some, you know, Trey Wisner at running back. Like, this is an offense as well that is built to win these type of games. And so I think it's going to be a very even matchup. And look, it's going to come down to who can make those key plays in the fourth quarter. I don't have a huge lean at this point, but I do think Texas maybe slightly, just given the mobility that Arch Manning brings to the table, I think that could be a decisive factor when you're talking about going up against a new defensive coordinator in Ohio State and maybe learning the personnel for Matt Patricia, learning the college game a little bit more. That can be difficult when you're facing a mobile quarterback like Arch Manning is.
I'm Bill Ryder. We're talking to Brian Fisher from Sports Illustrated here on the show. Brian, there's a strong argument we don't live in a very reasonable or rational world these days, especially when it comes to sports conversations. But if you were going to just present a reasonable outcome for Arch Manning's first season as a starter at Texas, what is a reasonable level of expectation for those of us that are eagerly awaiting seeing him play a lot?
You know, I think it's going to be difficult for him to live up to the external hype. And I think that he's handling it pretty well. You know, I think you talk with people around the program, like they're excited to see what he can do and whether that is ultimately, you know, living up to that kind of number one pick type of hype or ultimately just kind of being himself. You know, I think that there's some excitement that he finally gets to show what he's capable of. And, you know, frankly, you look back at last season, I think matching what his predecessor did in terms of numbers, I think is easy to do, especially given that Quinn Ewers missed some time last year, you know, missing two starts there. And frankly, you know, you look back at the season last year, about a dozen quarterbacks across the country, you know, kind of hit 3,500 yards and 25 touchdowns last year. I think that's kind of the baseline at this point. Texas's schedule, outside of this Ohio State game, it does kind of set up well for them early in the year to where, you know, they can get an offensive momentum, regardless of what happens in Columbus on Saturday morning. You know, this is an offense that is built to really feature that quarterback. And so I think with him, with Steve Sarkisian calling plays, this can be one of the best offenses in the country. And leading the way is going to be Arch Manning. And I don't think it's unreasonable at all to say that he could be in line to get to New York and get a Heisman invite. And we'll see from there what the ultimate numbers say. But I kind of picture a baseline pretty high. And that's not just based on hype. I think that's based on internal expectations as well there at Texas.
I cannot wait for tomorrow. I can't wait to start sort of watching him play. Brian, one of the things that I've discussed a lot on the show this week is just the massive amounts of expectation for so many programs and the pressure that comes with that. And I'm going to throw some coaches at you who are in different situations and different stages of their tenures at their respective programs. But when you talk about a Kalen DeBoer and Dabo and Lincoln Riley at USC and Brian Kelly, which of those coaches do you think are most likely to exceed expectations this year? Maybe is there someone you think is in real danger of doing the opposite?
Well, you know, if you talk about exceeding expectations, it might be Lincoln Riley there at USC. You know, I think this is a program that is more building towards 2026, you know, especially when you look at what the recruiting class is. They have the number one recruiting class in the country. But I think they were so close last year. So many one-score losses that they had. If they can flip those to wins this year, you know, they've got a returning quarterback coming back. You know, I think guys like on defense like Eric Gentry can make a massive difference if he's healthy throughout the season. So, you know, I would kind of expect USC a little bit to overperform, especially given that they're not ranked coming into the year. You know, I think there is, you know, certainly some significant hot seat talk there in Los Angeles about Lincoln Riley and his status, probably in the kind of too expensive to fire category at this point, but they know they need more results on the field. And so I think, you know, USC, the personnel in a better place than it has been these last couple of years, especially on both the offensive and defensive lines. I think they're looking more like a true Big Ten team. And I think that's going to lend, you know, a lot of credence to maybe them overperforming kind of the middling expectations coming into the year. As far as like, you know, falling short of them, I mean, I think you could probably pencil in Brian Kelly and LSU. I mean, there's so much pressure being packed, not only into this opener against Clemson, but, you know, they've just got a brutal schedule. I mean, even in the first month of the season, you know, you're playing Florida, which is another top 15 team. You know, you've got games like Georgia and in Jacksonville. Like, it's just a brutal schedule. And, you know, I think the talent level there in Baton Rouge is, you know, where they could contend theoretically for the national title, but it's pretty easy to actually imagine, you know, LSU maybe getting an injury or two to some key guys. Maybe Garrett Nussmeier doesn't quite perform to the level that he's expected behind a new offensive line. And maybe LSU, you know, falling short of little expectations. I think that's going to put a lot more pressure on Brian Kelly this season if they don't get off to that hot start.
Brian Fisher, you and I discussed Nebraska earlier, and for me, it's just because of sort of where I'm from and my family. I have family from there. It is where I turn as a program when I think about that. If things go badly in college football, you can lose your place atop the sport or where fan bases think they belong. Whether it's Oklahoma, who obviously did not cover themselves in glory last year, or it's Baylor, or it's another program maybe that I'm not thinking of that fits these parameters. Is there somebody out there that is on the brink of this kind of slide that you think can turn things around this year and maybe surprise people?
Well, you know, you mentioned Oklahoma. I think they're a fascinating test case, not just in terms of the pressure that's on Brent Venables, but I mean, there's a lot of change going on at that university that, you know, kind of above him that, you know, going to hire a new athletic director after, you know, 20 plus years with Josie retiring. I mean, there's been a new president recently, you know, a lot of change there at Oklahoma on top of, you know, moving into the SEC. And it was definitely a difficult transition for them last year, but, you know, they feel pretty confident with some of the personnel changes that they've made. They've brought in Jim Nagy at from the Senior Bowl to be the general manager. That they like where the roster is shaping up. And you know, you think if Britton Venables can kind of get over the hump, maybe Oklahoma is going to be okay. But with so much change, you know, that does kind of leave the jar open, especially given the success that we've seen it with Texas, with A&M, and the way they've recruited. I mean, it's a difficult life there in the SEC. So if you talk about going from where you historically expected Oklahoma to be, you know, consistently winning, you know, 10 plus games every year, you know, challenging for a conference title. I mean, those days, they do seem like they're kind of over there in Norman. And so I think this is going to be a big pivotal year, not just for Brent Venables, but for that program to kind of show what they are about, what they can prove. And I think they're in one of the more unique spots, you know, in college football. I mean, there's probably another half dozen type of similar situations out there. But Oklahoma, in my mind, really does stick out in terms of how much this year can mean, not just for the coaching staff and for a lot of those players. But I think broad, bigger picture, Oklahoma is in a transition spot, and they can kind of go either way as a program.
As a Missouri grad, Brian, if someone had told me that the exit to the SEC for both Mizzou and Oklahoma would lead to Missouri having a better football program than Oklahoma, I would have told that person to stop talking or thinking about sports. I mean, the impossibility of it from many years ago still strikes me. All right, Brian Fisher, let's use your expertise and at Sports Illustrated to maybe leave a program or two's fans with some hope as a last question here. last year, Indiana kind of entered the chat, right? That was an incredible season, an incredible accomplishment, and for a lot of us, a surprise. Are there any programs out there that you think, to the general fan, maybe not to people in your position, are under the radar and have a chance to, in a surprising way, push to be in the college football playoff this season?
Well, you mentioned Indiana. I mean, I think I almost would want to nominate the Hoosiers again. You know, I feel like everybody's kind of overlooking what they did last year. And look, that was still a very good football team. And I know the ending and some of those primetime games against Ohio State and Notre Dame didn't go the way that they wanted. But that was still a very good football team. And I think they could be even better this season. Yeah, the schedule is a little bit more difficult than it was last year. You know, you probably don't expect the likes of Washington and Michigan coming off a national title game to play like they did last season. And frankly, you know, there's some landmines on that slate, but I think with Fernando Mendoza coming in at quarterback, like the Hoosiers seem primed to still remain in that CFP conversation, which I think says a lot about what Kurt Cignetti has built there. And you know, I'll stick in the Big Ten too. Is it another team that's kind of in a similar spot is Illinois. Now I know they're in the top 12 in a lot of the polls, and the fact of the matter is, you know, they've got so much returning production, and I think in this day and age of the transfer portal and guys coming in and almost being mercenaries at times, to have a cohesive group that does know what they're doing on a down-to-down basis, I think that means a lot. We know Brett Bielema can win big-time games, and we know he can contend in the Big Ten, so I would definitely circle Illinois. They've got a few landmines on that slate, but if they can get past one or two of them in some of those tricky games, I do look for Illinois just because of what they have coming back this year. Could be one of those teams that surprises and makes CFP run.
Brian Fisher, this was great, man. Really appreciate you making time. Love the work over at Sports Illustrated. People, I hope, are following you at Brian D. Fisher and subscribing to the Others Receiving Votes podcast. Thank you for being on the show, buddy.
Absolutely. Great to be on with you.
Thank you, pal. Brian Fisher hanging out here on the program again over on X at Brian D. Fisher. Brian D. Fisher, and he is the host of Others Receiving Votes podcast. Speaking of entering the chat, Andrew Bogus has entered the chat, having heard us talk about his 9 RBI, which I just is grating to me. He says that there are people, Ryan, pushing for times out instead of timeout. If that happens, I will lose my mind. And then he wrote, "Leave me alone."
Is he joking? There's no push.
There are people pushing for times out. I don't know.
That doesn't make any sense. Timeout is singular.
I mean, not if you have four of them.
Timeouts.
You have four times outs? I don't know, man.
It's perfect the way it is. I think RBI is just the unique because it's an acronym, right? Like,
also, just we spent our entire lives as kids just saying, you know, oh, I had three RBIs oh my god, now I'm doing it. RBI, oh my god. See, look what Andrew's done.
Bogus broke Bill.
He should leave me alone. These highly rated folks, man. You're getting the rankings, you know? All of a sudden Indiana's walking around like they own the Big Ten. All right. 888-710-4ISN is the phone number. Let's do buy or sell. A lot of college football talk coming up next here on Rider Than You.
You're listening to the Rider Than You podcast. Welcome back to Rider Than You.
A cheeseburger is the best option at a barbecue.
Sell.
I'm going to go straight hamburger. You know what? I'll buy. I'll take it back.
Buy.
Well, no, I'm going to sell. It's a steak.
Sell.
It's a steak. I grilled steaks the other day. Does that count?
On the Infinity Sports Network.
Wow. Ryan Hickey taking shots at me, taking shots at Bogus, shots fired everywhere. Pretty bold for a guy that makes some pretty bad predictions.
I'm not taking any shots. Well, bogus, yes, because that's just ridiculous. Did, yeah. I'm not taking any shots at you. That's just funny.
You have three RBIs so far in this show.
I'll take it.
Your RBIs are excellent.
Do I have three strikeout?
180 RBIs.
How about we just make strikeouts now singular? He's got 10 strikeout.
It doesn't really make sense, but it sounds equally as bad. You know what we should do? Do you know what I would like to do? Buy or sell.
What side will Bill take on the biggest issues in the world of sports? It's time for today's edition of Buy or Sell on Writer Than You.
I figured, Bill, we talk about or start with maybe the biggest story of the day.
Talk to me about it.
And that is the fact that Micah Parsons, right, has been traded. So, assuming a lot of Cowboys fans are also Mavericks fans in the Dallas area, been a rough 8 months for him, going back to February when the Mavericks traded Luka Doncic to the Lakers. And now yesterday, the best player on their team, Micah Parsons, traded to the Packers. Buy or sell? The Cowboys trading Micah Parsons is worse than the Mavericks trading Luka Doncic.
Oh, man, that's a great question. I mean, this is bad. This is like comparing RBIs and times out.
There's no winner here.
There's no winner. I want to be clear. I'm not endorsing either of these. Buy or sell, the Parsons trade is worse. I'll buy.
Buy.
And here's why. There's two reasons. One, the Cowboys made that trade because of the ego of an owner, not the misguided basketball philosophy of somebody, right? And two, again, I'm not endorsing either one. What the Cowboys got back in return is paltry. Anthony Davis is at least a great player. Man, poor Dallas. Buy or sell, Dallas fans collectively did something in a previous life that brought these trades about.
Buy.
Yeah, what is happening? What's the karma going on there? Were they bullying Houston for too long? Or were they being mean to San Antonio?
Something. You got to do some sort of dance. I don't know. Wow. The juju has to be shifted down there big time. That's crazy.
It is crazy.
Like, same city for two of the biggest stars in their respective sports get traded within the last 8 months? Both in shocking. I mean, Cavs was
shocking.
But, like, both still. It's like, whoa.
Also, one in season, one right before the season begins. It's no time to process it.
Right. Or no time to make any other improvements for the most part.
Right. Happens in March. It's still awful. But at least Dallas fans would have 5 months to try to pretend to convince themselves the Cowboys are going to be fine. There's just... Their seasons got... Each of the Mavs and the Cowboys seasons got ruined in or just before the start of the season.
Crazy. So bad.
So bad.
So many coincidences or so many similarities. It's...
I have a question for you.
Okay.
Speaking of Luka Doncic, I found out where he lives. I found out his house. He moved into the city I live in. My son wants to... Oh, I think we already did this, but I'll ask again. My son wants to drive by the house. Buy or sell, that's okay.
Buy.
I think a drive-by is more than okay.
A little drive-by. I'm not going to knock on the door.
That would be...
Girl Scout cookies.
That'd be pretty bad.
Yeah. Yes, it would. It'd be a funny bit, though. Let me ask you this. I don't really want to do this because I probably will work somewhere else as well as here at some point, but buy or sell be funny for me to start just doing a bit where I go knock on famous people's doors and see what happens.
Buy.
You could get pretty famous pretty quickly, I think, doing that. Now, you make a lot of enemies.
Oh, you mean like record it and put it on YouTube or something?
You make your own channel, social media, that would explode very quickly. That's something that no one else is doing.
Call it knock knock.
Now, do you have a plan, like, once they answer the door? Like,
yeah, hey, it's me, it's Bill, what's your on again? What's going on?
I would love to know, if you go to 10 celebrities' houses, what the percentage is, even you get to the front door, number one, which I think would be very low, and then number two, they answer it.
Well, you keep going back, and then you cut it together until somebody answers.
Oh, you go every day? Like, you drive by, knock on the door, no one's
just go constantly, yeah. I mean, in my own neighborhood, right, places I could just walk to, Kendrick Lamar... Steve Nash, Luka Doncic. There's a couple tennis players. I don't know who they are, but I'm sure I could find out. I'm trying to think who else lives. There's some other ones, but I'm starting to blank. Oh, DeAndre Ayton just moved, apparently, somewhere around here.
Wow.
Because all the facilities are nearby.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. Like all the...
Wow.
Blake Griffin, I think, is around. I think that'd go badly. That might... Matt Leinart, who's a really nice guy.
Okay, but you were so close with your FaceTime.
Vince Vaughn would punch me. Vince Vaughn.
That would not be good for your life goal of trying to be best friends with Vince Vaughn.
You think that would sort of nip that in the bud a little bit?
I would probably, maybe for your happiness, maybe put him off to the side, skip over him when it's his turn?
I heard that Jim Harbaugh lives in the area.
That'd be a fascinating. I'd love to see his interaction. I used to see him like mowing his front lawn as you walk up and having a conversation, inviting you in.
Lincoln Riley lives in this neighborhood. He's not here very often, but Lane Kiffin has a house here.
I mean, look, if you ever wanted to do, again, you'd burn a lot of bridges with a lot of famous and powerful people. But I think for a short run, would get a lot of attention and your social medias would be very explosive.
But that's your motivating thing. That's not really my motivating thing.
Well, everyone's motivations is different. I wouldn't have the stones to do it. I would not do it.
That was a shot at your bad takes is what that was.
Well, unfortunately, for I guess myself, I don't do the takes for attention. That's how I feel.
You don't, huh?
And a lot of them just, I would say it's more coincidence, happen to turn out wrong.
And Sydney Sweeney doesn't act for attention. She just, shy.
She just makes bars of soap with her own bathwater. Just because she feels
generous. Believes in cleanliness.
That's right. Spread the word.
She wants a cleaner world.
I bet you more people are showering than ever before because of that soap.
That is the creepiest. If you bought a bar of that soap, you should seek help.
Be put on some sort of list, that's for sure. So now that the news is official, Micah Parsons is a Packer. A lot of other teams you would believe to be of interested in trading for the all-pro defensive end. Now, Jerry Jones yesterday did say that he had some parameters in terms of the teams he's looking for to trade Micah to. Said no division, but he also said he wanted to trade Micah to a team with cap space that allow Micah to get the contract extension he's looking for, but also had an interior defensive lineman that they could get back in a trade, which like they did for Kenny Clark. So kind of surmising some teams that would be in this possibility in this range. Patriots, Seahawks, Buccaneers, Lions, Rams, all possibly, if motivated enough, could have made a deal. Buy or sell, Bill. The team that missed out the most on not landing Micah Parsons is the Patriots.
Sell. It was the Bears.
Sell.
Wow, the Patriots would have been all in on defense, huh? Buy or sell, if the Patriots had landed Micah Parsons, you think they make the playoffs?
Sell.
Yeah, then no, right? I mean, it defeats the purpose, I think, of that kind of money and that kind of cap space if there's not a realistic success story at the end of the season.
I guess I'm not saying the Patriots is my answer, but I guess, and to defend that a little bit, it's also not a one-year rental, right? Like, you don't think you have to, if you're the Patriots, unless you trade for them, I don't think you have to make the playoffs this year because, in theory, with a young defensive end, young quarterback, kind of like with the Packers, your window is more open than just 2025.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I think it's a perfect fit for everyone other than Dallas in the trade that went down. Green Bay is a perfect fit for Green Bay and for Micah. I'm going to call Micah. It's my guy now.
He's got the name right, unlike other people. Jets GM Darren Moogie yesterday, Bill, said that he believes Justin Fields could follow in the footsteps of Baker Mayfield and Sam Darnold in the sense of quarterbacks reviving their career after a few failures. Now, I don't think Justin Fields is the only quarterback trying to get this claim. And you could argue Daniel Jones, Trevor Lawrence, Russell Wilson, Kyler Murray, other quarterbacks trying to revive their careers as well. Buy or sell, of these QBs, the quarterback that will have the best season in 2025 is Trevor Lawrence.
Sell. I hope so. I'd love to see his talent come to fruition and have the RBIs that he deserves, so to speak. But I think it's Justin Fields. Is that crazy? I actually think that he has, because I think he's less damaged. And I think Glenn is an interesting coach. And maybe there's a world where he can get that organization operating in a more competent way. Man, Trevor Lawrence. Buy or sell Trevor Lawrence, if things don't change, will be the most disappointing NFL player of this century.
Buy.
Yeah. I can't think of anybody else that's on that level.
I was just going to say, who is he in the running for? I don't even know.
Ryan Leaf was drafted in 99, right?
98, I think.
98. Even then, I think this is a other level.
And he was top five quarterback prospect like ever, Trevor Lawrence, when he came out? Like,
yes.
Perfect.
He's supposed to be Mahomes, right? He's supposed to be the best quarterback of this generation competing for legacies that last forever. If you go back to when he got drafted.
And now he's on a list with Daniel Jones and Justin Fields trying to revive his career.
What's crazy is how many of the guys you just listed won the Heisman Trophy, by the way.
Yeah. Wow.
I mean, you didn't list Baker Mayfield, but Baker Mayfield is a part of the question, right? He's obviously already resurrected his career. And Trevor Lawrence won the Heisman Trophy, if I remember this right. I can never remember this stuff. Did he win the Heisman Trophy? Maybe he didn't.
I don't.
Kyler did.
2018 was the year Kyler won, and that was his first year.
You know, I can tell you who didn't? Daniel Jones. That one I feel pretty confident on.
I don't think he did, because 2019 was Joe Burrow. 2020 was Devontae Smith. Yeah, I don't think he did, but he's a finalist.
Yeah.
And was capable of winning it, for sure.
I'll walk that back. A couple guys won the Heisman Trophy.
I'm going to throw in a just off the cuff here question, because I thought about four and Rez, I didn't include it here. Simply buy or sell. Jerry Jones is the worst GM in the NFL.
Buy.
Buy.
Yes. And the worst owner. And the worst owner.
Buy.
What a combo.
Would you say Jerry Jones is a top, one of the worst GMs in NFL history? Like top five worst GM NFL
buy. History? Look, dude, I think.
Buy.
Buy. Firing Jimmy Johnson and trading Micah Parsons and some of the quarterback decisions that he's made in drafts. So remember Quincy Carter over the years? Yeah. Because no other GM gets to have the job after any of the things I just mentioned and half a dozen other ones. You have a power struggle with your head coach and you fire him and then you get one under Switzer and then it all falls apart forever. You're fired. You're not hired in football again. Who was the guy that had it out with Marty Schottenheimer? And it wasn't A.J. Preller, was it? Who? I can't even remember. No, that's what's his name in Padres. I can't remember the guy's name. Like, there are GMs who have had power struggles with coaches and won the power struggle and lost the war. Won the battle, lost the war. But Jerry gets to just keep doing this again and again and again and again and again and again because he owns the team. A.J. Preller was sell. That's a real bet. I'm so glad Jerry Jones is around for Bum of the Week.
Sell.
This story here, Bill, is one of the reasons why I love college football. So, big game this weekend, LSU-Clemson top 10 matchup.
Guys, you won't stop with this game. Okay.
This is new. This is interesting. It adds a wrinkle to the game. So, LSU starting safety A.J. Halsey will miss the first half of the Clemson game after it was announced yesterday. He has to serve a suspension that dates back to the 2024 season finale, in which he was ejected when he was playing on Houston in the second half of a game against BYU for fighting in the end zone. Now, this suspension was announced Thursday in part because it seemingly was forgotten about by LSU, the SEC, and even the NCAA. Now, it's Twitter, so I'm not saying this is verified, but it's just a rumor here. There's a rumor that Clemson alerted the NCAA to this suspension that has to be enforced. Buy or sell, if this is true, you have a problem with Clemson ratting out LSU to the NCAA.
So I think it's hilarious.
So
The name I should have given you is A.J. Smith, the year that the Chargers went 14-2. And I think a field goal kicker, I think he missed a field goal in the
against
playoffs.
The Patriots.
That's right.
A.J. Smith, A.J. Preller, both, by the way, in San Diego. I don't think that's that big of a
but it was
a miss.
Yeah, no, I have no problem with Clem. I think it's hilarious. They should leak that it's true just to mess with LSU before the game starts.
Oh, how mad would Lion Kelly be?
By the way, this guy, A.J. Smith, is now a part-time scout.
Whoa. Oops. From GM to part-time scout?
Yeah, according to the internets.
Oh, man.
Oh, you know what? I apologize. He passed away a year ago. He was a part-time scout. Sell me. Come on, internet. Come on, AI. Dang it.
That is why you always double-check.
You praised my journalism skills earlier. Sell those, too. I'm going to blame the RBI. The non-RBI threw me for the whole show.
Always coming back
Jerry,
to the RBI.
The RBI was a part-time scout. By the way, that happened to Jerry Krause too. It's crazy, like how we're talking about Nebraska it happens to the guys that run these teams too. Jerry Krause was, the first time I met Jerry Krause, who was obviously like the GM of the Bulls when they were a dynasty. He was a baseball scout. I was at a Royals White Sox spring training game, surprise, and he was doing baseball scouting. because the White Sox and the Bulls are owned by the same guy, right? Reinsdorf. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
That's tough.
You know what he said? He said RBIs.
Bye.
That's a man I trust his scouting ability right there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, Bill, we got some big-time matchups here in college football in week number
more
one.
Questions.
Obviously, the bigger one. Number one, Ohio State. They're a 1.5-point home favorite over number 3, Texas. The game you love talking about. Number 4, Clemson. 4.5-point home favorite against LSU. And Notre Dame, 6th in the country. 2.5-point road favorite at number 10, Miami. Buy or sell, one of Ohio State, Clemson, or Notre Dame will lose this weekend.
Bye. I think Texas is going to
win.
I think Texas is going to win the game. Kind of. And the margin for error is enough that I think one of the other two teams can also maybe sneak it out.
I have two more questions left. We don't have a lot of time, so if it's okay, we'll go a little.
It's time for No Context, buy or sell.
Buy or sell. This is the right move.
Bye.
Bye.
Let's end on some positivity. Bum of the week's going to be tricky. You just nominated somebody who we're about to get to, which I think is incredibly classless by you. You've been nominated. You don't like that? You've been nominated. And there's a certain guy in Dallas who thought Micah Parsons' name was Michael Parsons, who probably has a pretty good chance. So we've got a robust number of candidates for Bum of the Week after a sports flash from Andrew Bogish.
Infinity Sports Network Sports Flash.
Bill, Ryan, those 9 RBI, courtesy of 4 homers for Kyle Schwarber last night. The Philly slugger had a chance to become the first ever with 5 long balls in one game, facing Braves infielder Vidal Brujan in his final at-bat last night, but...
Out to left, Eli White now, and then White makes the call and the catch, and he'll get another round of applause.
Yeah, we should all stand up and give him an applause.
John Crook, Tom McCarthy on NBC Sports Philadelphia. The Phillies demolished the Braves last night, 19-4. Schwarber now has 49 homers and 119 RBI for the season. Trent Grisham, Cody Bellinger, Jazz Chisholm all had 2 RBI in the Yankees' 10-4 win at the White Sox. Number 25, Boise State opened its season with a 34-7 loss at South Florida. The Broncos lost 3 fumbles, were stopped 3 times on 4th down. Michael Vick debuted as Norfolk State's head coach last night, lost to Towson 27-7. But DeSean Jackson's first game in charge of Delaware State, that was a loss, 35-17 at Delaware. Eddie George, though, won his first game at Bowling Green, 26-7 over Lafayette. I'm Andrew Bogish.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
All right, welcome back into the show. Bill Ryder with you. Thank you for listening, hanging out. Appreciate you. Happy Friday. This NASCAR race preview is sponsored by WeatherGuard Truck and Van Equipment. They're just as driven as the hardworking pros they serve. The NASCAR Cup Series playoffs start this weekend at the historic Darlington Raceway. The 10-race postseason starts with the Cookout Southern 500 as 16 drivers begin their quest to become the 2025 NASCAR Cup Series champion. Joey Logano is the reigning champion and looks to defend his title starting on Sunday, or as Jerry Jones would call him, Jimmy LaHoho. How do you get Micah Parsons' name wrong in the press? I mean, for all the criticisms of Nico Harrison, he didn't come in and keep saying, look, we decided to trade Luke Doncic because I like Luke and Luke's a good, right? Can you imagine what people would have done?
Could have been fired right there on the spot.
Gotta get the name right. Let's do Bum of the Week.
Hallelujah, I'm a bum.
All he's doing is a whole lot of damn nothing.
I'm a bum.
You rotten bum!
I'm a bum.
You're a bunch of bums.
I'm a bum, I'm a bum, I'm a bum.
Who's the bum this week? Let's find out on Writer Than You.
It will shock you to hear that Jerry Jones, Ryan, is nominated for Bum of the Week. But he's not the only one. You, my friend, you are a strong nominee from some of our listeners for saying there was a 0% chance that Mike would be traded. And I think that you have to actually be in consideration with Jerry Jones because you don't host. You produce a radio show where your host constantly said to you on and off the air, he can be traded. It's possible. And you discarded that. You didn't listen. You didn't pay attention to the wisdom. flowing from Rider Than You.
Can I defend myself for a hot second?
I guess.
I said the Cowboys wouldn't trade Micah Parsons. Mm-hmm. Jerry Jones said he traded Michael Parsons.
That's fair. It's well spoken.
So I think I may be off the hook here.
You've nominated Andrew Bogish for his RBI.
Nine RBI. Come on.
Yeah, nine RBI is not great. I mean, Jay Cutler, what a break he got for reportedly a four-day jail sentence for a DUI. Ostapenko has to be nominated, right, for screaming at
Taylor Townsend after a match and saying some things that very much cross line of true.
I mean, all the Shador superfans are like, the Browns are out to get him. Oh, they dream. Maybe you should just take a beat next time. Just take a beat. Breathe in, breathe out. You know? I'm going to go my pit. All the people who don't stop at stop signs. I've got to the point now when people don't stop at stop signs, I lay my horn on. I'm over it. Stop sign. Stop at the stop sign. Especially in the parts of the world where my kids walk around.
You've mentioned this before. Your area. What is going on?
There's like a residential area, but there's some traffic through there, and somebody set up a camera, and like once a week they'll do a supercut of all the people running the stop signs. It's crazy. It's just yeah.
Just stop. Hit the brakes.
Anybody else on this list? Oh, you know what? I'll nominate me for doubting that love is real, that love is love, because of Kelsey and Tay-Tay. I'm writing down doubting love. I doubted the love. Feels like a pretty good list, right? I'm just trying to make sure there's nobody I'm forgetting.
You know what the frustrating part is? I think there are like three or four winners that like on any other normal week should win. That
Jay Cutler should win.
Get the recognition.
Ostapenko should win. Shador should win. You still might win, so. But
might,
you
but
are.
Might not.
You do share company with Nick Costos and Mike Irvin.
And if it helps at all, Jerry could become, at least according to my calculations,
tell me,
the first back-to-back winner we've seen for Bum of the Week at least since April. Maybe this year.
Wow, okay. Well, this won't shock you to hear, but for letting your ego destroy the Dallas Cowboys year after year after year after year after year, for somehow watching Nico Harrison trade away Luka Doncic and say, hold my beer, but make it about me, for gifting the Green Bay Packers this opportunity, and for destroying the Dallas Cowboys, for trading Micah, not Michael Parsons, Jerry Jones, you are very deservedly the Bum of the Week, bro.
That's your Bum of the Week.
I detest you!
On Writer Than You.
All right, let's do some predictions. Biggest game of the weekend, Iowa against Central West Valley Community College. They have some cupcake team. Okay, Ohio State or Texas? I'm going to go Texas. I'm going to take Texas in the upset.
Bad news for you, I agree.
That is really bad news for me.
Congratulations to Ohio State.
I mean, there's some changes at Ohio State this year in terms of the coaching staff a little bit. I mean, there's some big changes on the football team. Also, Matt Patricia, I don't know. Maybe it'll work. Maybe it'll work.
Do you feel good about Matt Patricia scheming up to slow down Arch Manning tomorrow?
No, I don't feel good about Matt Patricia at all.
Period. Just Matt Patricia, period. Don't feel good about it.
Surprised he didn't apply for the offensive coordinator job from a couple years ago where he got to do that. That really worked out.
He has the experience you need now.
That really went well. Yeah, I like Texas in this game. Although, there's not a lot. There's one big known unknown, and that is Arch. And how he handles, and Matt Patricia, and how he sort of handles that pressure. Your favorite game, what you have called the game of the century, which I don't agree with, but you have called it that. Who do you like in LSU, Clemson?
I like Clemson at home. I think it has the possibility to get a little ugly.
I do too. I don't wear green a lot. It makes me a little nervous. Who do you like in Iowa, Albany?
tough one. The Great Danes. You never want to play them week number one on the road.
Are they the Great Danes?
Yeah, Albany Great
Danes.
No, they're
not.
Yes, they are.
That's a terrible mascot. Of course, every mascot's a terrible mascot, really.
Which would only make it that much more embarrassing if you're Iowa and you lose to the Great Danes.
The Great Danes. What other games would you like to predict? Do you want to predict your Notre Dame football team that you've abandoned, that you've betrayed with all your heart and soul?
Sure. I think they go on the road and beat Miami.
I'm not sold on Miami, are you?
No, I'm
not. I'm not. I'll believe that when I see it for 3 or 4 weeks in a row. Let's do, all right, who is going to disappoint this year more, USC or Clemson? And I think the standard is Clemson not making they're in different, very different conferences, but so relative to expectations, right? I think success for USC would be almost making the playoff, and I think success for Clemson is you make the playoff.
It's tough, because to your point, the expectations are low for USC. I'll still take the Trojans.
Yeah, I think the wheels could come off this year.
Right, and be right, 5 wins?
I think they could be 5 wins.
That's bad.
And I think, by the way, Lincoln Riley, and you recruit who you recruit, so it's not as if you don't get credit for it, but has had a wealth of quarterback talent and has not done that much with it. And he's supposed to be some offensive genius.
Anyway, 75 with Caleb Williams. I think it could get
real ugly, yeah. Who's going to have a better career starting today, Caleb Williams or Lincoln Riley, for the rest of time after today?
I'll take Caleb Williams. I feel good about it.
I will, too. By the way, that could go either way as well. Fun week, 3-day weekend here. I hope wherever you are, wherever you're listening, you get to hang out with family, have a barbecue, do your thing. Good luck to whatever team you're rooting for. Thank you for listening. I apologize if you're a Cowboys fan that you're going through this. Thank you to Ryan Hickey. Thank you to Andrew, Grammatically Correct Bogish. Thank you to Brian Fisher. I am Bill Ryder. We appreciate you. We'll see you back here next week on Ryder Than You.